Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. In this episode of Private Practice Secrets, we meet Nicole Grant, occupational therapist and founding director of Gateway Therapies in Brisbane, Australia. It becomes very, very apparent that Nicole has worked really hard to develop an amazing team. We have conversation about how she engages and trains up our new graduates and early career clinicians, and her commitment to them is immense, with training and ongoing support, mentoring, and really helping them find their clinical feet early in their careers. We also talk about the NDIS and how from the moment she heard about the NDIS, she was preparing herself and her business and her team for that. And she now looks at the NDIS future with positivity and optimism. They are completely ready to go and looking forward to it. I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Nicole Grant. I very much enjoyed it. And Nicole, after the recording, also said she found it really interesting to be able to reflect and to think out loud about the achievements and the point of difference and all of those great things that make Gateway Therapy special. Enjoy. Hello, listeners. We're in for another wonderful conversation today. I've managed to capture and sit down Nicole Grant, occupational therapist, the founding director of Gateway Therapies. And let it be known that we are sitting here chatting and we both have lipstick on. We've both showed up to the event. How are you, Nicole?
I'm very good, thank you. A bit cold today, but otherwise excellent.
Well, I'm thousands of kilometres south from you, so yeah. We could talk about cold another time, perhaps. You're in sunny Brisbane.
Feels like we've actually got winter happening here at the moment, which is really, really unusual.
What, 22 or something?
Yeah, it could. It's actually 20. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but yeah.
Poor you. Alrighty, stay warm. Now, let's give us a little bit of a nutshell. What's Gateway Therapies? What does it look like?
Ah, okay, good question. Gateway Therapies. So we are a multidisciplinary private practice, primarily OT. I'm a little bit biased towards occupational therapists being one myself. But we do have some wonderful speech therapists on the team. And in the past, we also tend to attract different types of allied health professionals. We've had social workers. We've got a teacher of the deaf at the moment. We have close connections with dietitians and other allied health professionals. So I like to work in partnership with other disciplines, either having them directly on my team or having close relationships with them. We are at the moment primarily a mobile therapy service. I moved from being a clinic-based service about 18 months ago, and that was just as a reflection of the changes in the nature of our practice and private practice here. So we found that a lot of our clients were preferring us to go to them. And so that's what we did, and that's what we've continued to do. So Gateway Therapies has evolved quite a bit over the years, and at the moment that's where we're at.
And how are your clients loving that?
Oh, it's been great, actually. I'm really glad we made the move because I feel like we're doing it. It certainly is more challenging to be a mobile practice, but I feel it's also far more rewarding. Our clients love us coming to them. We are seeing great results through the work that we're doing. And I think it's because our kids and our adults that we work with are learning transferable skills where it matters, where it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So in homes, in schools, in workplaces, wherever they feel that they need to make positive changes, that's where we will go.
I guess it's OT gold, isn't it? We're just task, place, person kind of professionals, and I suspect that we're often happiest in kindergartens and schools and homes and down the street and at Scouts or wherever
parks, playgrounds. We find ourselves in some interesting places, shopping centres, pools. We really do go everywhere, and it is all client-centred, goal-focused, and it certainly means that we can deliver.
Yeah. Sounds amazing. Thinking of all the conversations I have with our private practice owners, it seems to be a clinic-only kind of model or community-only model. And I'm interested that you were one and now you've gone to the other. I'm really interested that there's not always a lot of businesses that do a bit of both in between.
We do actually, to a point, do a bit of both. We are primarily mobile, but we do have, so where we're currently operating from, we're in an office. It's a corporate office type environment, and we've taken over sort of half a floor, but that's purely as a base for my team and for my admin team. But we do also have facilities there that are meeting facilities, boardrooms, et cetera, where we can actually bring clients. And we do that for things like initial interviews, initial assessments. We do use that space for some therapy work as well. It's not really well suited to kids. The neighbours don't really like us bringing noisy kids into the place.
I've heard this before in shared office buildings.
That's the situation. Mm. So we are really mindful of being good neighbours, and we'll only bring clients to the building that we can sort of predict the behaviour of, I guess. Having said that, our neighbours are pretty supportive and understand what we do, but we just find that it's not always the best place
for anybody.
So it's entirely appropriate and works really well for meetings and things like that, case conferences, et cetera. And some kids we do see there if it's desk-based work that we're working on and things like that. So it is great to have that space, because sometimes it is better to do some things in that more clinical corporate type environment. And it's certainly wonderful to have the space there to hold workshops and team meetings, and that's really fantastic. Mm. Probably the most, or the best thing that my team love about the space that we're in at the moment is that there is this amazing coffee shop downstairs, and they do the best coffee and really awesome hot chips. So we're on a really good thing where we are at the moment.
That is just such you are a destination employer with those sort of facilities at hand. Absolutely. At hand. Oh, goodness. Strategy. Goodness. Yeah. How many people are under your Gateway Therapies roof at the moment?
It tends to fluctuate a little. At the moment, we're a team of about 10, and that's a mix of admin and allied health professionals.
And are they employees or contractors? Which way have you gone on that front?
This has evolved for me over time as well. So when I first started my business back in 2010, I was primarily employing subcontractors. So that really worked for me at that time. I was in a position where I really just needed people who are ready to hit the ground running, who could be fairly autonomous in how they practiced. I obviously wanted to support them as best I could, but it was around that time I stupidly decided to start a business and start a PhD at the same
time. Oh, my God, what were you thinking?
Yeah. I know that your listeners can't see my hair, but there's definitely some grey in there. And I found a grey eyebrow the other day, which my kids were really, really amused by. So I think that, the last...
Sign of maturity.
Interesting time for me. But so subbies at that time were really convenient, because I trusted they had the experience and the know-how to work independently and could go out and just do a great job. What I've found, though, over the years is that, and this is where I'm at the moment, is that I'm really loving my employees, my staff. They are invested in us as a team, as an organisation. They share my vision and my passion, and we are working really wonderfully as a team. We are a reasonably young team at the moment, but what they lack in experience, they make up for in enthusiasm, and have an amazing understanding of best practice principles and evidence-based practice, having more recently graduated and having access to the most recent to the information. So at the moment I'm loving being an employer, having employees, and while it administratively is a little bit more of a headache, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. Am I hearing between the lines that you engage graduates and just love them up and get them going pretty quick?
Essentially, at the moment, it's my team is primarily, not all new grads, but a good chunk of them are. And I try to have a little bit of a mix between newies and the more experienced therapists. So I certainly still have some more experienced therapists on my team. But I'm in certainly a better position now that I've finished my doctorate to be able to support a younger team far more effectively. And so because I can do that, I'm confident in my ability to nurture my new grads, and certainly they are little sponges and just amazing, and also give me a little bit more energy too, funnily enough. It's like when you have kids, they kind of, I guess they bring out the best of you in a way. So, yeah, absolutely. If anybody is worried about taking on new grads, I certainly encourage you to give it some more thought, because I did avoid it for a long time, just assuming that it was easier to have people on your team that did have experience. But what they have to offer is so much more, so much more.
And just so much different. I'm a huge fan of early career clinicians. And by way of private practice viability and the workforce challenges that we're really only just starting to see the beginning of, it really is worth thinking about. And I would also want to add, think about doing it well, to have a really good 10, 20, 30, even 40-week onboarding, engagement process. Yeah. It could even be a little bit back to the future with internships and, some of this sort of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if this stuff started to pop up a bit more. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I've been reflecting on this even more recently. One of my sort of more recent clients is a nurse, and I was chatting to her about her history and how when she first started nursing, she was trained on the job. And it just got me thinking about our own professionals, our OTs and our speechies and other allied health. And I could see so much value in a similar type of model of training our young professionals. They learned so, and I just remember this as a new grad all those years ago myself, you learn so much on the job. And there's certainly a need for all of that theory and practical experience. And I certainly wouldn't want to see that reduced in any way. But I would love to see a little bit more, even like a 6-month internship or something. And I'm sure this has already been thought about by the academic world, but I would love to see something like that. Absolutely.
Well, I can send out the gentle challenge on that one to you and to listeners. I'm not sure that the academic world would kind of get what's needed on the ground, just because their talents perhaps they do definitely lie elsewhere. No one knows their business better than a business owner, or what sort of culture they want to install, or, the way we do things here. So there's got to be some sort of party between the two, hey, about what that first year looks like. I'm very confident in saying I learned more in my first year than in any other year since.
Definitely. Yeah, I would agree. I think that's one of the challenges, though, for our professions, though, is that lack of understanding of what the world of private practice looks like. And we do know that private practice is becoming, there are more more OTs and other health professionals in private practice than in government work. I believe there is at least a trend in that direction, if it's not the case already. And I think that our courses and the people in charge of these programs need to acknowledge that and build that into their coursework.
I do
see that the graduates that are coming through now seem to be a little bit more savvy. They seem to have a little bit more of an understanding of what life in the real world is like, certainly more so than I did coming out as a new grad. I graduated in 2002. So, yeah, things have certainly changed, and it's been quite a thrill to find that our sort of newer graduates are a little bit more across what they're going to be up against in private practice. They've still got a lot to learn, obviously, once they hit the ground. But, I think there is a bit of a move in the right direction there.
Yeah, I agree with you. A couple of years ago, I was engaged by a university to develop some tutorial scenarios that they work through with their final year OT students. Yeah. And I also go in twice a year and deliver a presentation about a specific private practice topic that's recorded and zipped around their campuses. And I thought that was really innovative. This literally started probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And at the and then I was talking recently with a lecturer at one of the Melbourne sort of schools, and they've brilliant idea. They've engaged the business faculty to come and come over to Allied Health and present some modules as well. Mm. That's kind of obvious when you think about it, isn't
it? Brilliant. Yeah.
So it makes it easier, I guess, for private practitioners, allied health business owners, to step into the adventure of engaging early career clinicians, because they may have some language and some concepts and a little bit more than perhaps their predecessors. So proud of them. I think it's a great skill set to come out with.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think what would be maybe a barrier for private practices is that, I guess, from a financial point of view, taking on younger, newer therapists that require a little bit more training and hand-holding can be a little bit more time-consuming. Obviously, you need more time to get them up to speed and billing as per your requirements. So I think that's one of the disadvantages, but honestly, it's worth putting the time and investing in them and their career development, because from what I've seen in the last few years, it certainly makes sense and is worth it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Agree. So you've got your beautiful team humming along and business is doing really, really nicely. What are you most proud of about what you do?
I'm not as proud of. I'm proud of supporting my therapists and providing them with interesting work and a diverse mix of cases and clients. We see a really good range of clients. So we work, I guess we specialise in paediatrics and particularly kids with autism spectrum disorder, but we also work right through the lifespan, and we will work with adults with acquired brain injuries and musculoskeletal issues and mental health issues. So we've got a really diverse skill set. So I'm really proud of being able to offer that. Some of the things that we've done more recently I'm particularly proud of. I've taken a team up to Nauru a couple of times. So one of our contracts that we have is to work with the refugee kids up there, and that's something that's fairly unique to what some other practices are doing, and it's certainly a challenge that other practices wouldn't take on. So I'm proud of myself and my team for being happy to take on the challenge and go there.
Yeah.
In
regards to your time and perhaps a typical week, how much clinical work versus business development work are you kind of doing?
It does fluctuate, but I would estimate that I would do about 30% billable versus business development / management.
Wow, that's amazing. How did you get to that point?
investing in my team. So it certainly wasn't easy. And I did find that the more client work I did, the less I could grow my business. Not that my vision has ever been to take over the world, but I certainly have this vision of helping as many people as I can. And I couldn't do that on my, can't do that on my own. And I needed a team that has a diverse skill set and availability to take on new clients. And so in order to be able to do that, I had to take a step back a little from my own caseload and invest time in growing the team and their skills and allocating work. So it's been a slow process over quite a few years of slowly tweaking that mix, allocating work, taking on my own cases, supervising, mentoring my team, and also there has been an element of having to train my admin team and my practice manager as well to be able to handle those phone calls as well, whereby people would be ringing asking for specifically for me just because they know me by name and reputation, and helping those people to understand that another therapist can be equally as good to work with. So it has been a number of things that I've had to tweak and refine over time. Yeah, didn't happen overnight.
Yeah, I salute you for your persistence on that front. That 70-30, I don't know anything about really what's under the hood of your business, but that is really commendable because it really positions you for growth but also time to get things done.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about having a little bit of clinical something is that it nearly always lights that fire of why we went to university in the first place. And it just keeps an ear to the ground and it keeps you attached to the language that your customers are using and what their worries are and what their joys are as well. And it quite possibly also informs a lot of your clinical governance and your system development and things as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, I will always have some, I guess, clinical work as part of my role, and I think it, for all of those reasons, it needs to be that way. Mm-hmm. I certainly have this philosophy of not asking my team to do anything that I wouldn't do myself, and I think they are also going to learn by my example. And I need to know what's going on out there as well. I can't just assume that things will never change, particularly with the NDIS rollout. I need to have my hand in it to experience it, to know what the challenges are, know where the opportunities are, and working directly with the clients is the best way to actually do that.
Yeah, we'll get to the NDIS in a minute. We'll just, you know, prepare for that. How did you develop all of your business nows?
Honestly, I've had some amazing mentors and managers in my career. I've got no formal training in business management. So there are certainly some things that I could improve, and I know I've made some mistakes along the way, but I have got, I guess, good foundation in some of the work that I've done previously, and I was as I said, I had some really amazing mentors and management, and still do to a point. There's still people that I certainly look up to, and I guess try to emulate. But I was very fortunate as a younger therapist myself to have been given opportunities to develop my leadership skills and things like that. And I certainly want to do the same for my team as well. You need to as well as a practice owner to invest in your team and develop their leadership skills so that, and this is one of the reasons why I have been able to step back a little bit from my clinical workload, is that I've been able to help some of my other therapists to support their teammates as well, which has been really good. So share the load, and I can have a little bit of time off occasionally as well, which is nice because I know that my team can take on some of my workload as well.
Mm. Mm. Many people I speak to have never done formal management business leadership training. It's been reading and watching and listening and self-investment and coaches and mentors and all of the above in different orders and priorities and timeframes. But it's an ongoing thing. I mean, once you get into business, it's just as diverse and interesting and challenging as it is the clinical. Clinical scene, there's always something new. You just need the algorithms of Facebook to change and you're kind of back to square one a bit. So, yeah.
I have done coaching. I did a few years back, I did take on a business coach. She was actually an OT as well, which was really handy.
Yeah.
I think it's good for that person to have some experience of your world.
Mm.
And I have certainly attended many workshops and seminars and absolutely. So lots of informal learning, if not formal.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. I don't want you to give away all your business secrets, but you've spoken a couple of times about investing in your team and the pride that you have in your team, but also the commitment you have to making them their very best version of themselves. How do you make that happen sort of across a year or so?
It does take a bit of sacrifice, admittedly. Mm. Financially, personally. So I guess I'm lucky. I've got some stability in my world that enables me to be flexible in how I work. So, you know, if I was entirely dependent upon, I guess, in all honesty, deriving the maximum income I could out of the company, I would do things a lot differently. I would assume it would be very difficult to be able to step back from your clinical work and invest in your team if you were entirely financially driven.
Yeah.
So what I've chosen to choosen.
Chosen. We've got chosen. A new word. Excellent. Chosen.
What I've chosen to do is to sacrifice some of I guess the financial gain that I may have been able to or to benefit financially, I guess, from my business, and instead reinvest that back into the business. So that, and by that I mean investing in my team, investing in their training, in their professional development and their personal development, in things like marketing as well. And we're about to have a booth at like the Source Kids Expo, which is running up here.
Oh, of course.
This will be our biggest, I guess, investment in marketing activities. And it's easy. I think it's easy. It would have been easier just to not do those things, because we are actually doing really well just by word of mouth and our website and Facebook page. But I really want to have a presence out there and for my team to also see that I'm doing everything I can to secure their future employment as well. So it does, I think, come down primarily to that financial investment and your time as well, but you need to obviously juggle that. So rather than seeing clients, I'm investing my time in my team, and time is money.
Yeah. And presumably with a bit of a performance sort of structure in place. You know, in my conversations with business owners, you know, during the interview process, there's very much the question, well, how will you develop my clinical skills?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easy to come up with an ABC answer, but to come up with the DEFG answer and the remarkable commitment to developing clinical skills and also customer service skills, I think is going to be a point of differentiation, because clinicians can pretty much, you know, will almost be able to choose where they want to work. They're already kind of trading businesses off against each other at the moment, which is interesting.
It's very interesting. The tables have really turned there. I mean, it used to be a matter of you sit down to an interview and your employer is really asking, what can you do for me? It's certainly the other way around now. And I found that in my interviews over the last sort of 12 months, I guess, it's very much a matter of what can you do for me, you know, from the position of the therapist. And it does take you aback, I think, as a manager, because you kind of feel like, well, I'm going to pay you, so, you know.
You're welcome.
So that should be enough for you right now. But
but it's not. It's not.
It's not. So, you know, in answer to the questions around what can I offer future therapists, it is really you will be well mentored. You have my commitment to that. You will have opportunity to participate in ongoing professional development, and I will allow that in your contract that you have time allocated for that. And we will put a little bit of money towards professional development opportunities. We try and schedule weekly, but at least fortnightly supervision sessions. For my speeches, because I'm an OT, I'm actually paying for another speech therapist to supervise them.
Good move.
Because I've done that for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is as an incentive to work with me, because they do want that supervision. But also because I demand quite a high quality of our service providers. I want my therapist to be the best. And in order to do that, they need to have access to good supervision and supervision as per the association guidelines. So that is one thing that I'm willing to do as well. Mm. And try to be clear on KPIs as well. So obviously there's always going to be KPIs around billable targets and things like that. But I'm also really keen to involve my team in different projects. So, for example, we've got a swimming program. We've collaborated with a local swim school and developed an autism-specific swimming program to help kids with autism learn to swim. And so I've involved one of my therapists in that program, and she's currently just finishing up formal training as a swim instructor. And so we are getting her in the pool because she loves it. No, I haven't just thrown her in there without talking to her. Yeah, that's it. You're the one that's going in the pool, sorry. No, but she identified early on and through that interview and intake process that she really loved to do that kind of stuff. So I've taken then that on board and given her the opportunity to be our sort of specialist in that. And so that's what I try to do with each of my team, identify their strengths, identify their goals, and work with them on trying to make that happen, if it all checks out. Another one of my therapists she's a passionate horse lover and has a horse and wants to one day be working in hippotherapy. And I've said to her, well, look, I've got a therapy dog, so it wouldn't be much of a stretch to have a therapy horse. So, you know, that one day we might find that Gateway Therapies is offering hypotherapy as well. Of course, we've got somebody with the passion and somebody with the horse, and I've got the open mind, and you know, why not? So I think that's attractive to my employees as well, that they can see that I'm trying to, obviously we've got our own services to offer, but that I'm also trying to incorporate their interests and their skills as well.
Sounds amazing. You've read my mind. My very next question was about what makes your business different, and a therapy dog and a therapy horse and therapy swimming are all well on the track to answering that. What else would you like to add about your point of differentiation?
I think that's probably enough for the moment. I think we've always got to be a little bit careful of going too crazy with not that those ideas are crazy. I mean, they're all based on research evidence and a credible, legitimate therapy options. But I think diversifying too much can water down your brand.
Can confuse customers too.
Yeah. So it's certainly about getting the mix right of what we offer versus what we want to offer, and making sure that all of those different projects are under the umbrella of our general philosophies and what we want to achieve as a company.
Yeah.
But that is certainly a point of difference, and that I do want to embrace the individual experience and interests of the team. I think that all of our graduates and even experienced therapists, because you do gain skills and experience over the years that enable you to specialise in different areas. And I think we have to embrace that as a company and build that into your, I guess, into your plans for your future, to take advantage of those skills and those experience and those different areas of passion, because it's natural for our therapists to develop in that.
Yep. Yeah. Be their own unique selves.
Yeah. Yeah. And to want to explore that a little bit further. So, and I think that's going to lead to better job satisfaction as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Completely with you on that one. Let's change gear a little bit and chill the Chardonnay. How are you positioning yourselves for the NDIS?
We've been working on this for a long time. So as soon as I heard about the NDIS, we were onto it. Wanted to know everything we could about it, how we needed to best prepare, and what the world was going to look like, so we knew our part in it. And I think we've done that really, really well. And that decision to move away from clinic-based services to mobile, the NDIS was on my mind when I made that decision, because NDIS certainly are wanting community-based services, or that focus towards community-based service delivery. So I've just put in place different things over the last few years that would position us well moving forward. So NDIS rollout for us is a couple of weeks. Well, it's a week and a half away now. It's not far at all. And I'm feeling really, really comfortable with where we're at the moment. We have always travelled out to Ipswich, but have continued to do so and have a handful of NDIS clients already. So we've been really lucky in that we've been able to test the water a little bit and get a feel for how it all works, what doesn't work, what we need to do. And so we've had our little, I guess, our pilot group of clients, and are now feeling quite ready to take on whatever Brisbane wants to throw at us. But it certainly has been lots and lots and lots of preparation. And I think anybody looking at coming in now is unfortunately going to be a little bit on the back foot. But obviously there's plenty that you can do to catch up. And NDIS, there's lots of forums and workshops, and I know OTA have got training online, and there's plenty of opportunity to catch up. But I think I'm feeling very comfortable with where we're at the moment and ready and excited.
Yeah, well played. I never thought I'd see anything remotely like this in my professional lifetime. Whilst it is a long way from maturity, it really will, hopefully, I'm literally sitting here with my fingers crossed that it will be a world-class program.
I think we're all sitting there with our fingers crossed.
I think there's lots of things crossed. Yep.
Lots of everything crossed. We've got everything crossed. And I think it's what we've also done is we didn't want to put all our eggs in one basket either. And I know there's a lot of startup companies out there who are hinging everything on NDIS. I don't think that's a safe thing to do. So we're certainly not expecting this to be the be-all and end-all. Hoping, I guess, that it will be a success, because it is an amazing opportunity for service providers and also people out there who haven't been able to access services before. So this is really exciting for them, and for those people who have been accessing services but only in a limited capacity. So I'm feeling really positive about what the NDIS can offer, but it's also, you know, I think there can be some instability, and it's not necessarily the answer for private practice.
No, definitely need a couple of lanes of income and diverse income streams coming in, particularly with whatever happens with the tiered pricing, for instance. So that's part of having those business smarts, is knowing what your tolerance is and having some sort of business plan in place that kind of shows you the map and where your edges are, where you're going to stay, where you're going to play. Exactly. What you need to develop to make all that good stuff happen, and to learn from it as well. I think There's been a lot of business learning in the last couple of years up against the NDIS and Medicare and all sorts of DVA and all sorts of other My Aged Care schemes. So, it's a bit of a business adventure for allied health business owners at the moment. But ultimately, I suspect it will be a pretty solid, good one. I don't know what you think.
I'm hoping so. I have this attitude of I'll believe it when I see it. And that's just my attitude with life in general, really. But with the NDIS, I do have lots of hope that it will be everything it wants to be. And I know that there's a lot of criticism of it, but it is a massive undertaking for our federal government, a lot of people involved. And there's going to be teething issues. And I think rather than be angry at the issues that are coming up with the rollout, I think it's more it's going to be better for everyone just to try and mitigate the risk and do what we can at our end as service providers, for example, like we just said, you know, making sure you are having a number of revenue streams, and if you've had the opportunity to test the waters, and that you've done that, and and then the rest is, I guess, it will be what it will be.
You manage what comes in the door.
Be prepared for anything.
Yeah,
I think it's the message.
What do you see in Gateway Therapy's future in perhaps the next 5 years?
I see lots of exciting things happening for us. I am feeling really good about our future. I feel like I've spent the last sort of 7-8 years, I guess, experimenting with different structures, different people, different processes, different, you know, all that usual
software, tech, ideas.
All of that, experimenting lots, learning lots. As I said, I've made plenty of mistakes, but I've learned from those. I've learned that mistakes don't necessarily mean the end of your business or the end of your career, depending on how you handle them, because they can mean that. But it all is your success is really based on your ability to handle challenges and handle ups and downs. And you've got to really develop a thick skin in business, right? So I've gone through all of that process, and I feel like I've come out the other side feeling really positive, feeling strong, having faith in myself and my team. And I see the next 5 years for us now is just getting on with it, really, being the best us we can be.
Implementing, testing and measuring, implementing, testing and measuring, working from a solid foundation. Wow, such a good story, such a good story. Tis exciting. All of the guests that come on have the chance, when I remember to actually ask them, to ask me a question. I've had a few rippers in the past, still recovering from others. Is there anything you want to ask me?
Okay.
Oh, gosh. Nervous.
Oh, no, because this question's going to come out as I speak. It may not be well formulated. What would you be doing anything differently? So you obviously have decided to do what you do for your own reasons. If you weren't doing what you do, what would you be doing? Would you be sitting on this side of the screen?
Ooh, possibly not. I when I sold my business in 2012, I sold with a very, very clear conscience and a very, very high level of comfort about not knowing what I wanted to do next. And that was part of the plan, and had time and explored and did some different things and did some personal development programs that were absolutely incredible. It wasn't apparent to me right then that business coaching would be in my future, but it became pretty obvious it was what I should be doing. People were phoning and saying, can you help? And I said, oh, yeah, you just do this, this and this. So I adore what I do. And I enjoy talking to people and, you know, shining a light on your amazing business story. The podcasting fun's great. The one-on-one coaching sessions are great. Presenting and speaking is good fun. So I can't see anything too bright other than this right now. But you know, like every other kind of business owner, you got to make sure you get some time out and that you dust off the passport from time to time and that you're available for fun and all of that good stuff. So the balance stuff continues. That's been a lifelong challenge for me anyway, because I've always been, you know, so attached and invested in what I do. But I'm really going to sit in this space for quite a while. I feel as though I can bring value to people's thinking and their businesses. So let's just kind of go all in on this for the next, X number of years.
And it sounds like a really good move somehow. It seems like a real natural fit for you. So that's wonderful.
Thank you. And please remind me to dust off my passport every so often and get out of town, get somewhere warm like you. Oh, what an amazing catch-up. It's amazing to hear about your commitment to your team. That's what's just lit my heart up today in our conversation. Thank you so much for sharing where you're up to now.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.